Advanced Cardiac Life Support, ACLS, Provider Handbook written by Dr. Carl Disk, narrated by Amazon Polly. The Save a Life Initiative has just released its newest course, Advanced Cardiac Life Support, ACLS. This manual is based on the 2020 Advanced Cardiac Life Support Guidelines published by the International Liaison Committee on Resuscitation. The Advanced Cardiac Life Support, ACLS, Provider Handbook is a comprehensive resource intended for healthcare professionals currently enrolled in an Advanced Cardiac Life Support Certification or Recertification course. It serves as the primary training material for ACLS certification and recertification courses. Although it is primarily intended for use during their courses, the handbook was also created to serve as daily reference material for healthcare professionals. Information covered in the handbook includes ACLS instruction for adults and children through multiple case scenarios. Case scenarios include, but are not limited to, respiratory arrest, ventricular fibrillation, and bradycardia. Specific ACLS algorithms and more are also included within the handbook. All material included in this handbook is delivered in a manner meant to enhance learning in the most comprehensive and convenient way possible. This manual is the primary training material for Advanced Cardiac Life Support Certification courses provided by Save a Life Certifications by NHCPS. Copyright 2023 Satori Continuum Publishing. All rights reserved. Except as permitted under the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, no part of this publication can be reproduced, distributed, or transmitted in any form or by any means, or stored in a database or retrieval system, without the prior consent of the publisher. Satori Continuum Publishing, 1810 East Sahara Avenue, Suite 1507, Las Vegas, Nevada 89104. Printed in the United States of America. Educational Service Disclaimer. This provider handbook is an educational service provided by Satori Continuum Publishing. Use of this service is governed by the terms and conditions provided below. Please read the statements below carefully before accessing or using the service. By accessing or using this service, you agree to be bound by all of the terms and conditions herein. The material contained in this provider handbook does not contain standards that are intended to be applied rigidly and explicitly followed in all cases. A healthcare professional's judgment must remain central to the selection of diagnostic tests and therapy options of a specific patient's medical condition. Ultimately, all liability associated with the utilization of any of the information presented here rests solely and completely with the healthcare provider utilizing the service. Version 2023.10. Table of Contents. Introduction to ACLS. 5. The Initial Assessment. 6. Basic Life Support. 7. Initiating the Chain of Survival. 7. 2020 BLS Guideline Changes. 8. BLS for Adults. 9. 1 Rescuer Adult BLS/CPR. 2 Rescuer Adult BLS/CPR Adult Mouth-to-Mask Ventilation. Adult Bag Mask Ventilation in 2 Rescuer CPR BLS for Children/Infants. 15. 1 Rescuer Child BLS/CPR. 1 Rescuer Infant BLS/CPR Child/Infant Mouth-to-Mask Ventilation. Child/Infant Bag Valve Mask Ventilation in 2 Rescuer CPR Self-Assessment for BLS. 20. Advanced Cardiac Life Support. 22. Normal Heart Anatomy and Physiology. 22. ACLS Rhythms and Interpretation. 23. The ACLS Survey, ABCD-30. Airway Management. 31. Basic Airway Adjuncts. Basic Airway Technique. Advanced Airway Adjuncts. Routes of Access. 35. Intravenous Route. Intraosseous Route. Pharmacological Tools. 36. Self-assessment for ACLS-37. Principles of early defibrillation. 38. Keys to using an automated external defibrillator. 39. Criteria to apply EED. Basic AED operation. Systems of care. 41. Cardiopulmonary resuscitation. 42. Initiating the chain of survival. Post-cardiac arrest care. 43. Targeted temperature management. Optimization of hemodynamics and ventilation. Percutaneous coronary intervention. Neurologic care. Acute coronary syndrome. 44. Goals of ACS treatment. Acute stroke. 45. Goals of acute ischemic stroke care. The resuscitation team. 47. Education, implementation, teams. 48. Self-assessment for systems of care. 49. ACLS cases. 50. Respiratory arrest. 50. Ventricular fibrillation and pulseless ventricular tachycardia. 54. Pulseless electrical activity and asystole. 56. Post-cardiac arrest care. 60. Blood pressure support and vasopressors. Hypothermia. Airway management. Symptomatic bradycardia. 64. Tachycardia. 67. Symptomatic tachycardia. Stable and unstable tachycardia. Acute coronary syndrome. 71. Acute stroke. 73. Self-assessment for ACLS cases. 77. ACLS essentials. 80. Additional tools. 81. Medicode. 81. CertAlert Plus Dash. 81. ACLS review questions. 82. Chapter 1. Introduction to ACLS. The goal of advanced cardiovascular life support, ACLS, is to achieve the best possible outcome for individuals who are experiencing a life-threatening event. ACLS is a series of evidence-based responses simple enough to be committed to memory and recalled under moments of stress. These ACLS protocols have been developed through research, patient case studies, clinical studies, and opinions of experts in the field. The gold standard in the United States and other countries is the course curriculum published by the International Liaison Committee on Resuscitation, ILCA. Previously, the ILCA published periodic updates to their cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR, and emergency cardiovascular care, ECC, guidelines on a 5-year cycle, with the most recent update published in 2020. Moving forward, the ILCA will no longer wait 5 years between updates. Instead, it will maintain the most up-to-date recommendations online at ecguidelines.heart.org. Healthcare providers are recommended to supplement the materials presented in this handbook with the guidelines published by the ILCA and refer to the most current interventions and rationales throughout their study of ACLS. While ACLS providers should always be mindful of timeliness, it is important to provide the intervention that most appropriately fits the needs of the individual. Proper utilization of ACLS requires rapid and accurate assessment of the individual's condition. This not only applies to the provider's initial assessment of an individual in distress, but also to the reassessment throughout the course of treatment with ACLS. ACLS protocols assume that the provider may not have all of the information needed from the individual or all of the resources needed to properly use ACLS in all cases. For example, if a provider is utilizing ACLS on the side of the road, they will not have access to sophisticated devices to measure breathing or arterial blood pressure. Nevertheless, in such situations, ACLS providers have the framework to provide the best possible care in the given circumstances. ACLS algorithms are based on past performances and results in similar life-threatening cases and are intended to achieve the best possible outcome for the individual during emergencies. The foundation of all algorithms involves the systematic approach of the BLS survey and the ACLS survey, using steps A, B, C, D, that you will find later in this handbook. Refer to the Basic Life Support, BLS Provider Handbook, also presented by the Save a Life Initiative, for a more comprehensive review of the BLS survey. This handbook specifically covers ACLS algorithms and only briefly describes BLS. All ACLS providers are presumed capable of performing BLS correctly. While this handbook covers BLS basics, it is essential that ACLS providers be proficient in BLS. The initial assessment. Determining whether an individual is conscious or unconscious can be done very quickly. If you notice someone in distress, lying down in a public place, or possibly injured, call out to them. If the individual is unconscious, then start with the BLS survey and move on to the ACLS survey. If they are conscious and responsive, obtain consent to provide care and continue assessment and questioning to determine next steps. Make sure the scene is safe before approaching the individual and conducting the BLS or ACLS survey. When encountering an individual who is down, the first assessment to make normal is whether they are conscious and physiology. Understanding normal cardiac anatomy and physiology is an important component of performing ACLS. The heart is a hollow muscle comprised of four chambers surrounded by thick walls of tissue, septum. The atria are the two upper chambers, and the ventricles are the two lower chambers. The left and right halves of the heart work together to pump blood throughout the body. The right atrium, RA, and the right ventricle, RV, pump deoxygenated blood to the lungs where it becomes oxygenated. This oxygen-rich blood returns to the left atrium, LA, and then enters the left ventricle, LV. The LV is the main pump that delivers the newly oxygenated blood to the rest of the body. Blood leaves the heart through a large vessel known as the aorta. Valves between each pair of connected chambers prevent the backflow of blood. The two atria contract simultaneously, as do the ventricles, making the contractions of the heart go from top to bottom. Each beat begins in the RA. The LV is the largest and thickest walled of the four chambers, as it is responsible for pumping the newly oxygenated blood to the rest of the body. The sinoatrial, SA, node in the RA creates the electrical activity that acts as the heart's natural pacemaker. This electrical impulse then travels to the atrioventricular, AV, node, which lies between the atria and ventricles. After pausing there briefly, the electrical impulse moves on to the His-Purkinje system, which acts like wiring to conduct the electrical signal into the LV and RV. This electrical signal causes the heart muscle to contract and pump blood. By understanding the normal electrical function of the heart, it will be easy to understand abnormal functions. When blood enters the atria of the heart, an electrical impulse that is sent out from the SA node conducts through the atria, resulting in atrial contraction. This atrial contraction registers on an electrocardiogram, ECG, strip as the P wave. This impulse then travels to the AV node, which in turn conducts the electrical impulse through the bundle of His, bundle branches and Purkinje fibers of the ventricles, causing ventricular contraction. The time between the start of atrial contraction and the start of ventricular contraction registers on an EC strip as the PR interval. The ventricular contraction registers on the ECG strip as the QRS complex. Following ventricular contraction, the ventricles rest and repolarize, which is registered on the ECG strip as the T wave. The atria also repolarize, but this coincides with the QRS complex and therefore cannot be observed on the ECG strip. Together, a P wave, QRS complex, and T wave at proper intervals are indicative of normal sinus rhythm, NSR. Abnormalities that are in the conduction system can cause delays in the transmission of the electrical impulse and are detected on the ECG. These deviations from normal conduction can result in dysrhythmias, such as heart blocks, pauses, tachycardias and bradycardias, blocks and drop beats. These rhythm disturbances will be covered in more detail further in the handbook. ACLS Rhythms and Interpretation. Step 1. Recap the PQRST properties. P wave. Electrical activity is traveling through the atria. Synonymous with atrial depolarization. Reflects atrial contraction. QRS complex. Electrical activity is traveling through the ventricles. Depolarization of the left and right ventricles. Reflects ventricular contraction. T wave. Synonymous with ventricular repolarization. Reflects the start of ventricular relaxation. PR interval. Onset of the P wave to the start of the QRS complex. Reflects conduction through the atrioventricular, AV, node. PR segment. End of the P wave to the start of the QRS complex. Reflects time delay between atrial and ventricular activation. SD interval. Onset of the S wave to the start of the T wave. Reflects initial, slow phase of ventricular repolarization. SD segment. End of the S wave, J point, to the start of the T wave. Reflects ventricular repolarization. QT interval. Onset of the QRS complex to the end of the T wave. Reflects the period between ventricular depolarization and ventricular repolarization. TP interval. Onset of the T wave to the end of the P wave. Reflects a period of electrical inactivity. RR interval. Reflects time elapsed between two successive R waves of the QRS. Step 2. Identify the common categories of ACLS rhythms. With a few examples. Sinus rhythms. Normal sinus rhythm, NSR, sinus bradycardia. Sinus tachycardia. Bradyarrhythmia and conduction blocks. First degree AV block. Second degree AV block type I, Moebius type I, Wenke block. Second degree AV block type 2, Moebius type 2. Third degree AV block, complete heart block, CHD. Tachyarrhythmias. Supraventricular tachycardia, SVT, wide complex tachycardias. Pulseless rhythms. Pulseless ventricular tachycardia, VTAC, ventricular fibrillation, VFib, pulseless electrical activity, PEA, asystole. Atrial dysrhythmias. Atrial flutter. Atrial fibrillation, AFib. Step 3. Identify the most common ACLS rhythms, both commonly tested and commonly seen. Normal sinus rhythm, NSR, normal P wave. Normal QRS complex. Normal T wave. HR 60 to 100 BPM, at rest treatment, none. Sinus bradycardia. Normal P wave. Normal QRS complex. Normal T wave. HR, less than 60 BPM, at rest treatment, symptomatic, atropine, dopamine, infusion, epinephrine infusion. Sinus tachycardia. Normal P wave. Normal QRS complex. Normal T wave. HR greater than 100 BPM, at rest treatment, reverse underlying condition, fever, anxiety, exercise, beta blockers, metoprolol, sotalol. First degree heart block. Prolonged PR interval due to delay in AV signal transmission. P wave may be buried in the preceding T wave. Treatment, transcutaneous pacing, only indicated if prolongation of the PR interval is greater than 400 milliseconds. Second degree AV block type I, Moebius type I, Wenke box, progressive lengthening of the PR interval. Progression occurs until the QRS complex is dropped. TX, atropine, dopamine, transcutaneous pacing. Second degree AV block type 2, Mobitz type 2 PR interval is greater than 0.20 seconds and consistent, not gradually getting longer, but drops a beat, generally on a pattern of 3 to 1 or 4 to 1. Treatment: transcutaneous pacing. Third degree AV block, complete heart block, CHP, no identifiable relationship between the P wave and QRS waves. PP intervals are normal but do not relate to the QRS complex. Treatment: transcutaneous pacing. Supraventricular tachycardia, SVT, profoundly rapid atrial rhythm with narrow QRS complexes. Occurs when the signal impulse originates over the bundle branches. HR, 150 to 250 BPM. TX, vagal maneuvers, adenosine, synchronized cardioversion. Atrial fibrillation, a AFib uniquely characterized by an absence of P waves before the QRS complex. HR, highly irregular with significant fluctuation. Treatment, beta blockers, metoprolol, sotalol, etc., CA++ channel blockers, diltiazem, verapamil, etc., digoxin, synchronized cardioversion. Atrial flutter, uniquely characterized by a sawtoothed flutter appearance. Toothed fluttering represents multiple P waves for a single QRS complex. Treatment, synchronized cardioversion, beta blockers, metoprolol, sotalol, etc., CA++ channel blockers, diltiazem, verapamil, etc., digoxin. Ventricular tachycardia, VTAC, abnormally patterned YQRS complex. No P waves. High likelihood of rapid deterioration to a state of ventricular fibrillation, VFib, often responsive to electrical defibrillation. HR, greater than 100 BPM. Treatment, defibrillation. Pulseless ventricular fibrillation, VFib, characterized by a chaotic and disorganized wave pattern. Patient has no palpable pulse. Treatment, defibrillation, epinephrine, amiodarone, lidocaine, HCL. The ACLS survey, ABCD. Airway. Monitor and maintain an open airway at all times. The provider must decide if the benefit of adding an advanced airway outweighs the risk of pausing CPR. If the individual's chest is rising without using an advanced airway, continue giving CPR without pausing. However, if you are in a hospital or near trained professionals who can efficiently insert and use the airway, consider pausing CPR for a maximum of 10 seconds. Breathing. In cardiac arrest, administer 100% oxygen. Keep blood O2 saturation, SATs, greater than or equal to 94% as measured by a pulse oximeter. Use quantitative waveform capnography when possible. Normal partial pressure of CO2 is between 35 to 40 millimeters of mercury. High-quality CPR should produce an ECO2 between 10 to 20 millimeters of mercury. If the ECO2 reading is less than 10 millimeters of mercury, confirm the quality of CPR and placement of advanced airway. If still less than 10 millimeters of mercury after 20 minutes of CPR for an intubated individual, then you may consider stopping resuscitation attempts. Circulation. Obtain intravenous for access when possible. However, if after two unsuccessful attempts, go straight to intraosseous access, IO. Monitor blood pressure with a blood pressure cuff or intra-arterial line if available. Monitor the heart rhythm using pads and a cardiac monitor. When using an AED, follow the directions, i.e. shocker-shockable rhythm. Give fluids when appropriate. Use cardiovascular medications when indicated. Differential diagnosis. Start with the most likely cause of the arrest and then assess for less likely causes. Treat reversible causes and continue CPR as you create a differential diagnosis. Stop only briefly to confirm a diagnosis or to treat reversible causes. Minimizing interruptions in perfusion is key. Airway management. If bag mask ventilation is adequate, providers may defer insertion of an advanced airway. Healthcare providers should make the decision as to the appropriateness of placing an advanced airway during the ACLS survey. The value of securing the airway must be balanced against the need to minimize the interruption in perfusion that results in halting compressions during airway placement. Basic airway equipment includes the oropharyngeal airway, OPA, and the nasopharyngeal airway, NPA. The primary difference between an OPA and a NPA is that an OPA is placed in the mouth while an NPA is inserted through the nose. Both airway equipment terminate in the pharynx. The main advantage of an NPA over an OPA is that it can be used in either conscious or unconscious individuals because the device does not stimulate the gag reflex. Advanced airway equipment includes the laryngeal mask airway, laryngeal tube, esophageal tracheal tube, and endotracheal tube. Different styles of these supraglottic airways are available. If it is within your scope of practice, you may use advanced airway equipment when appropriate and available. Basic airway adjuncts. Oropharyngeal airway, OPA. The OPA is a J-shaped device that fits over the tongue to hold the soft hypopharyngeal structures and the tongue away from the posterior wall of the pharynx. OPA is used in individuals who are at risk for developing airway obstruction from the tongue or from relaxed upper airway muscle. A properly sized and inserted OPA results in proper alignment with the glottis opening. If efforts to open the airway fail to provide and maintain a clear, unobstructed airway, then use the OPA in unconscious victims. An OPA should not be used in a conscious or semi-conscious individual because it can stimulate gagging, vomiting, and possible aspiration. The key assessment to determine if an OPA can be placed is to check if the individual has an intact cough and gag reflex. If so, do not use an OPA. Nasopharyngeal airway, NPA. The NPA is a soft rubber or plastic uncuffed tube that provides a conduit for airflow between the nares and the pharynx. It is used as an alternative to an OPA in individuals who need a basic airway management adjunct. Unlike the oral airway, NPAs may be used in conscious or semi-conscious individuals, individuals with intact cough and gag reflex. The NPA is indicated when insertion of an OPA is technically difficult or dangerous. NPA placement can be facilitated by the use of a lubricant. Never force placement of the NPA as severe nosebleeds may occur. If it does not fit in one nare, try the other side. Use caution or avoid placing NPAs in individuals with obvious facial fractures. Suctioning. Suctioning is an essential component of maintaining a patent airway. Providers should suction the airway immediately if there are copious secretions, blood, or vomit. Attempts at suctioning should not exceed 10 seconds. To avoid hypoxemia, follow suctioning attempts with a short period of 100% oxygen administration. Monitor the individual's heart rate, oxygen saturation, and clinical appearance during suctioning. If a change in monitoring parameters is seen, interrupt suctioning and administer oxygen until the heart rate returns to normal and until clinical condition improves. Assist ventilation as warranted. Only use an OPA in unresponsive individuals with no cough or gag reflex. Otherwise, an OPA may stimulate vomiting, laryngeal spasm, or aspiration. An NPA can be used in conscious individuals with intact cough and gag reflex. However, use carefully in individuals with facial trauma due to the risk of displacement. Keep in mind that the individual is not receiving 100% oxygen while suctioning. Interrupt suctioning and administer oxygen if any deterioration in clinical picture is observed during suctioning. Basic airway technique. Inserting an OPA. Step 1. Clear the mouth of blood and secretions with suction if possible. Step 2. Select an airway device that is the correct size for the person. Too large of an airway device can damage the throat. Too small of an airway device can press the tongue into the airway. Step 3. Place the device at the side of the person's face. Choose the device that extends from the corner of the mouth to the earlobe. Step 4. Insert the device into the mouth so the point is toward the roof of the mouth or parallel to the teeth. Do not press the tongue back into the throat. Step 5. Once the device is almost fully inserted, turn it until the tongue is cupped by the interior curve of the device. Inserting an NPA. Step 1. Select an airway device that is the correct size for the person. Step 2. Place the device at the side of the person's face. Choose the device that extends from the tip of the nose to the earlobe. Use the largest diameter device that will fit. Step 3. Lubricate the airway with a water-soluble lubricant or anesthetic jelly. Step 4. Insert the device slowly, moving straight into the face, not toward the brain. Step 5. It should feel snug. Do not force the device into the nostril. If it feels stuck, remove it and try the other nostril. Tips on suctioning. When suctioning the oropharynx, do not insert the catheter too deeply. Extend the catheter to the maximum safe depth and suction as you withdraw. When suctioning an endotracheal, ET, tube, keep in mind the tube is within the trachea, and that you may be suctioning near the bronchi or lung. Therefore, sterile techniques should be used. Each suction attempt should be for no longer than 10 seconds. Remember, the person will not get oxygen during suctioning. Ideally, hyperoxygenate before any suction attempts to eliminate that oxygen loss. Monitor vital signs during suctioning and stop suctioning immediately if the person experiences hypoxemia, oxygen sats less than 94%, has a new arrhythmia or becomes cyanotic. OPAs too large or too small may obstruct the airway. NPAs sized incorrectly may enter the esophagus. Always check for spontaneous respirations after insertion of either device. Advanced airway adjuncts. Endotracheal tube. The endotracheal, ET, tube is an advanced airway alternative. It is a specific type of tracheal tube that is inserted through the mouth or nose. It is the most technically difficult airway to place. However, it is the most secure airway available. Only experienced providers should perform ET intubation. This technique requires the use of a laryngoscope. Fiber optic portable laryngoscopes have a video screen, improve success, and are gaining popularity for field use. Laryngeal mask airway. The laryngeal mask airway, LMA, is an advanced airway alternative to ET intubation and provides comparable ventilation. It is acceptable to use the LMA as an alternative to an esophageal tracheal tube for airway management in cardiac arrest. Experience will allow rapid placement of the LMA device by an ACLS provider. Laryngeal tube. The advantages of the laryngeal tube are similar to those of the esophageal tracheal tube. However, the laryngeal tube is more compact and less complicated to insert. This tube has only one larger balloon to inflate and can be inserted blindly. Esophageal tracheal tube. The esophageal tracheal tube, sometimes referred to as a combi tube, is an advanced airway alternative to ET intubation. This device provides adequate ventilation comparable to an ET tube. The combi tube has two separate balloons that must be inflated and two separate ports. The provider must correctly determine which port to ventilate through to provide adequate oxygenation. During CPR, the chest compression to ventilation rate for adults is 30:2. If advanced airway is placed, do not interrupt chest compressions for breaths. Give one breath every 6 seconds with continuous chest compressions. Routes of access. Historically, in ACLS, providers have administered drugs via the intravenous, 4, or the ET route. ET absorption of drugs is poor, and optimal drug dosing is unknown. Therefore, the intraosseous, IO, route is now preferred when 4 access is not available. Below are the priorities for vascular access. Intravenous route. A peripheral 4 is preferred for drug and fluid administration, and less central line access is already available. Central line access is not necessary during most resuscitation attempts, as it may cause interruptions in CPR and complications during insertion. Placing a peripheral line does not require CPR interruption. If a drug is given via peripheral route of administration, do the following. 1. Intravenously push bolus injection, unless otherwise indicated. 2. Flush with 20 milliliters of fluid or saline. 3. Raise extremity for 10 to 20 seconds to enhance delivery of drug to circulation. Intraosseous route. Drugs and fluids can be delivered safely and effectively during resuscitation via the IO route if IV access is not available. IO access can be used for all age groups, can be placed in less than 1 minute, and has more predictable absorption than the ET route. When using peripheral IV route of administration, drugs can take up to 2 minutes or more to reach central circulation. The effect of medications given may not be seen until even longer. High-quality CPR helps circulate these drugs and is an important part of resuscitation. Any ACLS drug or fluid that can be administered intravenously can also be given intraosseously. If possible, administer any medication for or IO early in any 2-minute CPR segment. Pharmacological tools. Use of any of the ACLS medication in Table 1 should be done within your scope of practice and after thorough study of the actions and side effects. This table only provides a brief reminder for those who are already knowledgeable in the use of these medications. Moreover, Table 1 contains only adult doses, indications and routes of administration for the most common ACLS drugs. Doses, routes, and uses of common drug. Adenosine. Main ACLS use. Narrow PSVT/SVT. Wide QRS tachycardia, avoid adenosine in irregular wide QRS. Dose/4/IO. 6 mg 4 bolus may repeat with 12 mg in 1 to 2 minutes. Notes. Rapid 4 push close to the hub, followed by a saline bolus. Continuous cardiac monitoring during administration. Causes flushing and chest heaviness. Ideally, use a 3 ml syringe, 3-way stopcock, and a 10 ml flush to administer the adenosine efficiently. Amiodarone. Main ACLS use. VF/pulseless VT. VT with pulse. Tachycardia rate control. Dose/4/IO. Conscious VT/VF, 150 mg over 10 minutes, followed by a drip. Unconscious VF/VT, 300 mg, at 150 mg if not effective. Max dose, 450 mg. Notes. Anticipate hypotension, bradycardia, and gastrointestinal toxicity. Continuous cardiac monitoring. Very long half-life, up to 40 days, do not use in second or third degree heart block. Do not administer via the ET tube route. Atropine. Main ACLS use. Symptomatic bradycardia. Dose/4/IO. 1 mg/4/IO. Max dose, 3 mg. 2 to 4 mg/4/IO may be needed. Notes. Cardiac and BP monitoring. Do not use in glaucoma or tachyarrhythmias. Minimum dose, 0.5 mg. Specific toxins/overdose, for example, organophosphates. Dopamine. Main ACLS use. Shock/CHF. Symptomatic bradycardia. Dose/4/IO. 5 to 20 micrograms/kg per minute. Titrate to desired blood pressure. Notes. Fluid resuscitation first. Cardiac and BP monitoring. Epinephrine. Main ACLS use. Cardiac arrest. Anaphylaxis. Symptomatic bradycardia / shock. Dose / 4 / IO. 1.0 mg, 1:10, 0004 / IO or 1 ampoule, 1 to 1000 in 10 milliliters of normal saline. Maintain, 0.1 to half a microgram / kg per minute titrate to desired blood pressure. 0.3 to half a milligram IM, repeat every 5 minutes as needed. 2 to 10 micrograms per minute infusion. Titrate to response. Notes. Give via central line when possible. Continuous cardiac monitoring. Note: distinguish between 1 to 1000 and 1:10, 0:00 concentrations. Lidocaine. Lidocaine is recommended when amiodarone is not available. Main ACLS use. Cardiac arrest, VF/VT, wide complex tachycardia with pulse. Dose/4/IO. Initial 1 to 1.5 mg/kg for loading. Second, half of first dose in 5 to 10 minutes. Maintain 1 to 4 mg per minute. Initial 0.5 to 1.5 mg/kg 4. Second, half of first dose in 5 to 10 minutes. Maintain 1 to 4 mg per minute. Notes. Cardiac and BP monitoring. Rapid bolus can cause hypotension and bradycardia. Use with caution in renal failure. Magnesium sulfate. Main ACLS use. Cardiac arrest / pulseless torsade. Torsade de pointe with pulse. Dose/4/IO. Cardiac arrest, 1 to 2 grams diluted in 10 milliliters D5WIVP. If not cardiac arrest, 1 to 2 grams for over 5 to 60 minutes. Maintain, 0.5 to 1 gram per hour for. Notes. Cardiac and BP monitoring. Rapid bolus can cause hypotension and bradycardia. Use with caution in renal failure. Calcium chloride can reverse hypermagnesemia. Procainamide. Main ACLS use. Wide QRS tachycardia. Preferred for VT with pulse, stable dose/4/IO. 20 to 50 mg per minute for until rhythm improves, hypotension occurs, QRS widens by 50% or max dose is given. Max dose, 17 mg/kg. Drip, 1 to 2 grams in 250 to 500 milliliters at 1 to 4 milligrams per minute. Notes. Cardiac and BP monitoring. Caution with acute ME. May reduce dose with renal failure. Do not give with amiodarone. Do not use in prolonged QT or CHF. Sotalol. Main ACLS use. Tachyarrhythmia. Monomorphic VT. Third line antiarrhythmic. Dose/4/IO. 100 mg, 1.5 mg, / kg for over 5 minutes. Notes. Do not use in prolonged QT. Table 1. Self-assessment for ACLS. 1. An individual presents with symptomatic bradycardia. Her heart rate is 32. Which of the following are acceptable therapeutic options? A. Atropine. B. Epinephrine. C. Dopamine. D. All of the above. 2. A person with alcoholism collapses and is found to be in torsade de pointe. What intervention is most likely to correct the underlying problem? A. Rewarm the individual to correct hypothermia. B. Administer magnesium sulfate 1 to 2 grams 4 diluted in 10 milliliters D5W to correct low magnesium. C. Administer glucose to correct hypoglycemia. D. Administer naloxone to correct narcotic overdose. 3. You have just administered a drug for an individual in supraventricular tachycardia, SVT. She complains of flushing and chest heaviness. Which drug is the most likely cause? A. Aspirin. B. Adenosine. C. Amiodarone. D. Amitriptyline. Answers. 1. D. Atropine is the initial treatment for symptomatic bradycardia. If unresponsive, for dopamine. Or epinephrine is the next step. Pacing may be effective if other measures fail to improve the rate. 2. B. Hypomagnesemia or low Mg++ is commonly caused by alcoholism and malnutrition. Administration of 4 magnesium may prevent or terminate torsade de pointe. 3. B. Adenosine is the correct choice for SVT treatment and commonly results in reactions such as flushing, dyspnea, chapter chest 5, pressure, and lightheadedness. Principles of early defibrillation. The earlier the defibrillation occurs, the higher the survival rate. When a fatal arrhythmia is present, CPR can provide a small amount of blood flow to the heart and the brain, but it cannot directly restore an organized rhythm. The likelihood of restoring a perfusing rhythm is optimized with immediate CPR and defibrillation. The purpose of defibrillation is to disrupt a chaotic rhythm and allow the heart's normal pacemakers to resume effective electrical activity. The appropriate energy dose is determined by the design of the defibrillator, monophasic or biphasic. If you are using a monophasic defibrillator, give a single 360J shock. Use the same energy dose on subsequent shocks. Biphasic defibrillators use a variety of waveforms and have been shown to be more effective for terminating a fatal arrhythmia. When using biphasic defibrillators, providers should use the manufacturer's recommended energy dose. Many biphasic defibrillator manufacturers display the effective energy dose range on the face of the device. If the first shock does not terminate the arrhythmia, it may be reasonable to escalate the energy delivered if the defibrillator allows it. To minimize interruptions in chest compressions during CPR, continue CPR while the defibrillator is charging. Be sure to clear the individual by ensuring that oxygen is removed and no one is touching the individual prior to delivering the shock. Immediately after the shock, resume CPR, beginning with chest compressions. Give CPR for 2 minutes, approximately 5 cycles. A cycle consists of 30 compressions followed by 2 breaths for an adult without an advanced airway. Those individuals with an advanced airway device in place can be ventilated at a rate of 1 breath every 5 to 6 seconds, or 10 to 12 breaths per minute. Keys to using an automated external defibrillator. If you look around the public places you visit, you are likely to find an automated external defibrillator, AED. An AED is both sophisticated and easy to use, providing life-saving power in a user-friendly device, which makes it useful for people who have never operated one and for anyone in stressful scenarios. However, proper use of an AED is very important. Ideally, while CPR is continued, turn on the AED and then attach the pads to the upper right side and lower left side of the individual's chest. Once the pads are attached correctly, the device will read the heart rhythm. If the pads are not attached appropriately, the device will indicate so with prompts. Once the rhythm is analyzed, the device will direct you to shock the individual if a shock is indicated. A shock depolarizes all heart muscle cells at once, attempting to organize its electrical activity. In other words, the shock is intended to reset the heart's abnormal electrical activity into a normal rhythm. AED key points. Assure oxygen is not flowing across the patient's chest when delivering shock. Do not stop chest compressions for more than 10 seconds when assessing the rhythm. Stay clear of patient when delivering shock. Assess pulse after the first 2 minutes of CPR. If the end tidal CO2 is less than 10 mm of mercury during CPR, consider adding a vasopressor and improve chest compressions. However, after 20 minutes of CPR for an intubated individual, you may consider stopping resuscitation attempts. Criteria to apply AED. You should use an AED if the individual does not respond to shouting or shaking their shoulders. The individual is not breathing or breathing ineffectively. The carotid artery pulse cannot be detected. Basic AED operation. To use an AED, do the following. 1. Power on the AED. 2. Choose adult or pediatric pads. 3. Attach the pads to bare chest, not over medication patches, and make sure cables are connected. Dry the chest if necessary. 4. Place one pad on upper right side, and the other on the chest a few inches below the left armpit. 5. Clear the area to allow AED to read rhythm, which may take up to 15 seconds. 6. If the AED states no shock advised, restart CPR. 7. If the AED indicates a shock is needed, clear the individual, making sure no one is touching them and that the oxygen has been removed. Ensure visually that the individual is clear and shout clear. 8. Press the shock button. 9. Immediately resume CPR starting with chest compressions. 10. After 2 minutes of CPR, the AED with current programming will analyze the rhythm. 11. Continue to follow the AED prompts. If the AED is not working properly, continue CPR. Do not waste excessive time troubleshooting the AED. CPR always comes first, and AEDs are supplemental. Do not use the AED in water. AED is not contraindicated in individuals with implanted defibrillator/pacemaker, however, do not Chapter place pad directly over the device. Systems of care. The ILCA guidelines describe systems of care as a separate and important part of ACLS provider training. These systems of care describe the organization of professionals necessary to achieve the best possible result for a given individual's circumstances. They include an overview of the ways life-saving interventions should be organized to ensure they are delivered efficiently and effectively. Hospitals, EMS staff, and communities that follow comprehensive systems of care demonstrate better outcomes for their patients than those who do not. Management of life-threatening emergencies requires the integration of a multidisciplinary team that can involve rapid response teams, RRTs, cardiac arrest teams, and intensive care specialists to increase survival rates. Cardiopulmonary resuscitation. Successful cardiopulmonary resuscitation, CPR, requires the use of it as part of a system of care called the chain of survival. As with any chain, it is only as strong as its weakest link. Thus, everyone must strive to make sure each link is strong. For instance, community leaders can work to increase awareness of the signs and symptoms of cardiac arrest and make AEDs available in public places. EMS crews must stay abreast of updates and innovations in resuscitation and hone the skills required to deliver CPR quickly and effectively. Hospitals should be ready to receive patients in cardiac arrest and provide excellent care. Critical care and reperfusion centers should be staffed by experts and equipped with the latest technology. Because recovery from cardiac arrest continues long after the initial hospitalization, patients should have formal assessment and support for their physical, cognitive, and psychosocial needs. Initiating the chain of survival. Early initiation of BLS has been shown to increase the probability of survival for a person dealing with cardiac arrest. To increase the odds of surviving a cardiac event, the rescuer should follow the steps in the adult chain of survival. Step 1, recognize symptoms and activate EMS. Step 2, perform early CPR. Step 3, defibrillate with AED. Step 4, advanced life support. Step 5, post-cardiac arrest care. Step 6, recovery. Post-cardiac arrest care. Integrated post-cardiac arrest care is the fifth link in the adult chain of survival. The quality of this care is critical to providing resuscitated individuals with the best possible results. When the interventions below are provided, there is an increased likelihood of survival. Care of the patient after the return of spontaneous circulation, ROSC, requires close attention to oxygenation, blood pressure control, evaluation for percutaneous coronary intervention, targeted temperature management, and multimodal neuroprognostication. Because recovery from cardiac arrest continues long after the initial hospitalization, patients should have formal assessment and support for their physical, cognitive, and psychosocial needs. After a resuscitation, debriefing for lay rescuers, EMS providers, and hospital-based healthcare workers may be beneficial to support their mental health and well-being. Targeted temperature management. Recommended for comatose individuals with return of spontaneous circulation after a cardiac arrest event. Individuals should be cooled to 89.6 to 93.2 degrees Fahrenheit, 32 to 36 degrees Celsius, for at least 24 hours. Optimization of hemodynamics and ventilation. 100% oxygen is acceptable for early intervention, but not for extended periods of time. Oxygen should be titrated so that individuals' pulse oximetry is greater than 94% to avoid oxygen toxicity. Do not overventilate to avoid potential adverse hemodynamic effects. Ventilation rates of 10 to 12 breaths per minute to achieve ECO2 at 35 to 40 millimeters of mercury. 4. Fluids and vasoactive medications should be titrated for hemodynamic stability. Tight glycemic control for best patient outcome. Percutaneous coronary intervention. Percutaneous coronary intervention, PCI, is preferred over thrombolytics. Individuals should be taken by EMS directly to a hospital that performs PCI. If the individual is delivered to a center that only delivers thrombolytics, they should be transferred to a center that offers PCI if time permits. Neurological care. Neurologic assessment is key, especially when withdrawing care, i.e., brain death, to decrease false positive rates. Specialty consultation should be obtained to monitor neurologic signs and symptoms throughout the post-resuscitation period. Acute coronary syndrome. For individuals with acute coronary syndrome, ACS, proper care starts during the call to EMS. First responders must be aware of and look for signs of ACS. Quick diagnosis and treatment yield the best chance to preserve healthy heart tissue. It is very important that healthcare providers recognize individuals with potential ACS in order to initiate evaluation, appropriate triage, and time management. Goals of ACS treatment. Early EMS communication allows for preparation of emergency department personnel and cardiac catheterization lab and staff. Once the ACS patient arrives at the receiving facility, established protocols should direct care. The shorter the time is until reperfusion, the greater the amount of heart tissue that can be saved, and the more optimal the overall outcome. Major adverse cardiac events, MACE, include death and non-fatal myocardial infarction. Life-threatening complications of ACS include ventricular fibrillation, pulseless ventricular tachycardia, bradyarrhythmias, cardiogenic shock, and pulmonary edema. EMS should have the capacity to perform ECGs on scene and on the way to the hospital. The receiving hospital should be made aware of possible ACS especially ST elevation myocardial infarction elevation, STEMI, and non-ST elevation myocardial infarction, NSTMI. Acute stroke. Outcomes for individuals with stroke have improved significantly due to the implementation of the acute stroke system of care. The community is better equipped to recognize stroke as a brain attack, and there is greater awareness of the importance of medical care within 3 hours of symptom onset, because you will have the opportunity to reverse said symptoms with the fibrinolytic. Likewise, EMS systems have been enhanced to transport individuals to regional stroke care centers that are equipped to administer fibrinolytics. Goals of acute ischemic stroke care. The overall goal of stroke care is to minimize brain injury and optimize the individual's recovery. Preferential transport to stroke-capable centers has been shown to improve outcomes. Stroke centers are equipped with resources often not available at smaller community hospitals. The presence of specialists, including neurologists and stroke care specialists, multidisciplinary teams experienced in stroke care, advanced imaging modalities, and other therapeutic options make transport to stroke centers the most suitable option. The goal of the stroke team, the emergency physician, or other experts should be to assess the individual with suspected stroke and get to the CT scanner within 10 minutes. The 8 Ds of stroke care highlight the major steps of diagnosis and treatment of stroke and key points at which delays can occur. The 8 Ds of stroke care. Detection, rapid recognition of stroke symptoms. Dispatch, early activation and dispatch of EMS delivery, rapid EMS identification, management, and transport. Door, adhere to all door-to delivery times, such as door-to-needle in less than 60 minutes, etc. Data, rapid triage, evaluation, and management in ED. Decision, stroke expertise and therapy selection. Drug, fibrinolytic therapy, intra-arterial strategies. Disposition, rapid admission to the stroke unit or critical care unit. The resuscitation team. The ILCA guidelines for ACLS highlight the importance of effective team dynamics during resuscitation. In the community, outside a healthcare facility, the first rescuer on the scene may be performing CPR alone. However, a code blue in a hospital may bring dozens of responders/providers to a patient's room. It is important to quickly and efficiently organize team members to effectively participate in ACLS. The ILCA suggests a team structure with each provider assuming a specific role during the resuscitation. This consists of a team leader and several team members. Team leaders will organize the group, monitor performance, be able to perform all skills, direct team members, provide critique of group performance after the resuscitation effort. Team members will understand their role, understand others' roles too, be willing, able, and skilled to perform the role, understand the ACLS sequences, be committed to the success of the team. Good team dynamics consist of clear roles and responsibilities, knowing limitations, constructive interventions, knowledge sharing, summarizing and re-evaluating, closed loop communication, clear messages, mutual respect. It is important to know your own clinical limitations. Resuscitation is the time for implementing acquired skills, not trying new ones. Only take on tasks you can perform successfully. Clearly state when you need help and call for help early in the care of the individual. Resuscitation demands mutual respect, knowledge sharing, constructive criticism, and follow-up discussion, debriefing, after the event. Clear communication between team leaders and team members is essential. Education, implementation teams. Only about 20% of the individuals who have a cardiac arrest inside a hospital will survive. This statistic prompted the development of a cardiac arrest system of care. 4 out of 5 individuals with cardiopulmonary arrest have changes in vital signs prior to the arrest. Therefore, most individuals who eventually have a cardiac arrest showed signs of impending cardiac arrest. Survival rates could be improved if individuals are identified and treated with ACLS protocols sooner. Originally, specialized groups of responders within a hospital, called cardiac arrest teams, attended to a patient with recognized cardiac arrest. These teams responded to a code blue after someone presumably recognized an active cardiac arrest and sought help. Many believed cardiac arrest teams would improve survival rates, but the results were disappointing. Studies show that survival rates were the same in hospitals with cardiac arrest teams as in those without a team. As a result, hospitals are replacing cardiac arrest teams with rapid response teams, RRTs, or medical emergency teams, METs. Anyone can call for the RRT/MET if there is any concern by the patient, a healthcare provider, or a family member. Rather than waiting for loss of consciousness and full cardiopulmonary arrest, RRT/METs closely monitor patients in order to treat them before the cardiac arrest occurs. These teams combine the efforts of nurses, physicians, and family members to detect an impending cardiac arrest. When hospitals implement RRT/METs, there are fewer cardiac arrests, fewer ICU transfers, improved survival rates, and shorter lengths of inpatient stay. Self-assessment for systems of care. 1. What is the longest a rescuer should pause to check for a pulse? A. 20 seconds. B. 10 seconds. Circa 5 seconds. D. Less than 2 seconds. 2. Select the proper pairing regarding CPR for an adult. A. Chest compression 60 to 80/minute, 2 inches deep, 5 centimeters. B. Chest compressions 80/minute, 1.5 inches deep, 4 centimeters. C. Chest compressions 100/minute, 3 inches deep, 8 centimeters. D. Chest compression 100 to 120 per minute, 2 to 2.4 inches deep, 5 to 6 centimeters. 3. What is the role of the second rescuer during a cardiac arrest scenario? A. Summon help. B. Retrieve AED. C. Perform ventilations. D. All of the above. Answers. 1. B. Pulse checks are limited to no more than 10 seconds. If you are unsure whether a pulse is present, begin CPR. 2. D. Chest compression 100 to 120 per minute, 2 to 2.4 inches deep, 5 to 6 centimeters. 3. D. Take advantage of any bystander and enlist their help based on their ACLS cases. Respiratory arrest. Individuals with ineffective breathing patterns are considered to be in respiratory arrest and require immediate attention. There are many causes of respiratory arrest, including but not limited to cardiac arrest and cardiogenic shock. Resuscitate individuals in apparent respiratory arrest following BLS or ACLS protocols. Respiratory arrest is an emergent condition in which the individual is either not breathing or is breathing ineffectively. If someone is breathing ineffectively, it can be agonal or gasping respirations, which can often go unrecognized. The airways listed in the left column are considered advanced airways, while those in the right column are basic airways. Although OPAs and NPAs are considered to be basic airways, they require proper placement by an experienced provider. Advanced airway placement requires specialized training, which is beyond the scope of ACLS certification. However, all ACLS providers should be familiar with the proper management of advanced airways in order to be part of an effective life support team. CPR is performed with the individual lying on their back. Gravity will cause the jaw, the tongue, and the tissues of the throat to fall back and obstruct the airway. The airway rarely remains open in an unconscious individual without external support. The first step in any airway intervention is to open the airway. This is accomplished by lifting the chin upward while tilting the forehead back. The goal is to create a straighter path from the nose to the trachea. Do not overventilate, i.e., give too many breaths per minute or too large volume per breath. Both can increase intrathoracic pressure, decrease venous return to heart, diminish cardiac output, as well as predispose individuals to vomit and aspirate gastrointestinal contents. Pulseless ventricular tachycardia and ventricular fibrillation. Pulseless ventricular tachycardia, VT, and ventricular fibrillation, VF, are life-threatening cardiac rhythms that result in ineffective ventricular contractions. The ventricular motion of VF is not synchronized with atrial contractions. VT or VTAC is a condition in which the ventricles contract more than 100 times per minute. VF or fib is a rapid quivering of the ventricular walls that prevents them from pumping. The emergency condition, pulseless VT, occurs when ventricular contraction is so rapid that there is no time for the heart to refill, resulting in undetectable pulse. In both cases, individuals are not receiving adequate blood flow to the tissues. Despite being different pathological phenomena and having different ECG rhythms, the ACLS management of pulseless VT and VF are essentially the same. Pulseless VT and resuscitation for VF starts with the BLS survey. An ADD reads and analyzes the rhythm and determines if a shock is needed. The AED is programmed to only prompt the user to defibrillate pulseless VT and VF rhythms. The machine does not know if the individual has a pulse or not. This is the primary reason you should not use an AED in someone with a palpable pulse. ACLS responses to pulseless VT and VF within a hospital will likely be conducted using a cardiac monitor and a manual defibrillator. Thus, the ACLS provider must read and analyze the rhythm. Shocks should only be delivered for pulseless VT and VF. Likewise, antiarrhythmic drugs and drugs to support blood pressure may be used. Rules for ventricular fibrillation. Regularity: there is no regular shape of the QRS complex because all electrical activity is disorganized. Rate: the rate appears rapid, but the disorganized electrical activity prevents the heart from pumping. P-wave: there are no P waves present. PR interval: there are no PR intervals present. QRS complex: the ventricle complex varies. VF and pulseless VT are both shockable rhythms. The AED cannot tell if the individual has a pulse or not. Pulseless electrical activity and asystole. Pulseless electrical activity, PEA, and asystole are related cardiac rhythms in that they are both life-threatening and unshockable cardiac rhythms. Asystole is a flatline ECG. There may be subtle movement away from baseline, drifting flatline, but there is no perceptible cardiac electrical activity. Always ensure that a reading of asystole is not a user or technical error. Make sure pads have good contact with the individual, leads are connected, gain is set appropriately, and the power is on. P is one of many waveforms by ECG, including sinus rhythm, without a detectable pulse. P may include any pulseless waveform with the exception of VF, VT, or asystole. Hypovolemia and hypoxia are the two most common causes of P. They are also the most easily reversible and should be at the top of any differential diagnosis. If the individual has return of spontaneous circulation, ROSC, proceed to post-cardiac arrest care. Standard dose epinephrine is vasopressor of choice. Epinephrine is still the best choice according to 2020 guidelines. Of 16 observational studies on timing in the recent systematic review, all found an association between earlier epinephrine and ROSC for patients with non-shockable rhythms, although improvements in survival were not universally seen. For patients with shockable rhythm, the literature supports prioritizing defibrillation and CPR initially, and giving epinephrine if initial attempts with CPR and defibrillation are not successful. Always verify that a reading of asystole is not equipment failure. Make sure pads make good contact with the individual, all cables are connected, gain is set appropriately, and the power is on. Hypovolemia and hypoxia are easily reversed and are the two most common causes of P. Adult cardiac arrest. CPR quality. Push hard, 22.4, 5 to 6 centimeters, and fast, 100 to 120 BPM, and allow chest recoil. Minimize interruptions. Do not overventilate. If no advanced airway, 30 to 2 compression to ventilation ratio. Quantitative waveform capnography. If ECO2 less than 10 mHg, attempt to improve CPR quality. Shock energy. Biphasic delivery of energy during defibrillation has been shown to be more effective than older monophasic waveforms. Follow manufacturer recommendation, for example, initial dose of 120 to 200 J, if unknown, use the maximum dose available. Second and subsequent doses should be equivalent and high doses should be considered. Monophasic, 360 J. Return of spontaneous circulation. Return of pulse and blood pressure. Sudden sustained increase in PETCO2, typically greater than or equal to 40 millimeters of mercury, spontaneous arterial pressure waves with intra-arterial monitoring. Advanced airway. Supraglottic advanced airway or ET intubation. Absolute placement confirmation. 1. Negative agastric auscultation. 2. Positive bilateral chest auscultation. 3. Vocal cord visualization. 4. Quantitative ECO2. 10 breaths per minute with continuous chest compressions. Drug therapy. Epinephrine 4/iodose, 1 mg, administer as soon as possible then every 3 to 5 minutes after. Amiodarone 4/iodose, first dose is 300 mg bolus, second dose is 150 mg. Lidocaine, first dose, 1-1. 5 mg/kg, second dose, 0.5 to 0.75 mg/kg. Reversible causes. Hypovolemia. Hypoxia. H plus acidosis, hypothermia. Hypo/hyperkalemia. Hypoglycemia. Tamponade, cardiac. Toxins. Tension pneumothorax. Thrombosis, pulmonary or coronary. Trauma. Post-cardiac arrest care. If an individual has a return of spontaneous circulation, ROSC, start post-cardiac arrest care. Immediately. The initial BLS/ACLS processes are meant to save an individual's life, while post-cardiac arrest care is meant to optimize ventilation and circulation, preserve heart and brain tissue/function, and to maintain recommended blood glucose levels. Pay close attention to oxygenation, blood pressure control, need for percutaneous coronary intervention, and ideal temperature management. The 2020 ILCA guidelines recommend formal assessment and support for an individual's continued physical, cognitive, and psychosocial needs because recovery from a cardiac arrest event continues long after the initial hospitalization. Be sure to remember to address the mental health needs of the first responders also, and schedule a debriefing for lay rescuers, EMS providers, and hospital-based healthcare workers after a resuscitation event. Airway management. Early placement of advanced airway as needed. Manage respiratory parameters. Keep 10 breaths per minute. Pulse ox goal 92 to 98%. Titrate to PACO 235 to 45 mmHg. waveform capnography, capnometry, to confirm ETT placement. VOMIT, an acronym to describe post-cardiac arrest carat. Vital signs, especially checking blood pressure. Oxygen, do they need to be intubated at all, or do they need a type of oxygen apparatus? Myocardial infarction, do they need to get to a chest pain center? If do they need four fluids? Do they need a drip? Targeted temperature management, TTM, only if they are still unresponsive. Blood pressure support and vasopressors. Obtain early ECG. Consider blood pressure support in any individual with systolic blood pressure less than 90 millimeters of mercury or mean arterial pressure, MAP, less than 65. Unless contraindicated, 1 to 2 liters of 4-saline or lactated ringers is the first intervention. When blood pressure is very low, consider vasopressors, commonly referred to as pressors. Vasopressors and inotropes are medications used to create vasoconstriction or increase cardiac contractility, respectively. Consider using the following. Dopamine and norepinephrine are the pressors of choice for individuals who are not in cardiac arrest. Vasopressin and phenylephrine are the second agents to be added. Epinephrine is generally reserved for severe hypotension or as a last-line agent. Titrate the infusion rate to maintain the desired blood pressure. The post-cardiac arrest care algorithm was updated to emphasize the need to prevent hyperoxia, hypoxemia, and hypotension. Targeted temperature management, TTM targeted temperature management, is the only documented intervention that improves/enhances brain recovery after cardiac arrest. Induced targeted temperature management can be performed in unresponsive individuals and should be continued for at least 24 hours. The goal of induced targeted temperature management is to maintain a core body temperature between 89.6 to 96.8 degrees Fahrenheit, 32 to 36 degrees Celsius, for at least 24 hours by using a cooling device with a feedback loop. Device manufacturers have developed several innovative technologies that improve the ability to affect and manage targeted temperature management in the post-arrest individual. Targeted temperature management should be induced and monitored by trained professionals. Induced targeted temperature management should not affect the decision to perform percutaneous coronary intervention, PCI, because concurrent PCI and targeted temperature management are reported to be feasible and safe. Symptomatic bradycardia. Bradycardia is defined as a heart rate of less than 60 beats per minute. While any heart rate less than 60 beats per minute is considered bradycardia, not every individual with bradycardia is symptomatic or having a pathological event. Individuals in excellent physical shape often have sinus bradycardia. Symptomatic bradycardia may cause a number of signs and symptoms including low blood pressure, pulmonary edema and congestion, abnormal rhythm, chest discomfort, shortness of breath, lightheadedness, and/or confusion. Symptomatic bradycardia should be treated with the ACLS survey. If bradycardia is asymptomatic but occurs with an arrhythmia listed below, obtain a consultation from a cardiologist experienced in treating rhythm disorders. Symptoms of bradycardia. Shortness of breath. Altered mental status. Hypotension. Pulmonary edema / congestion. Weakness / dizziness / lightheadedness. Symptomatic bradycardia review. Sinus bradycardia. Normal rhythm with slow rate. First degree AV block. PR interval is longer than 0.20 seconds. Type I second degree AV block. PR interval increases in length until QRS complex is dropped. Type 2 second degree AV block. Constant PR intervals may be prolonged before a random QRS is dropped. Third degree AV block. P waves and QRS complex. Tachycardia. Tachycardia is a heart rate of greater than 100 beats per minute. When the heart beats too quickly, there is a shortened relaxation phase. This causes two main problems. The ventricles are unable to fill completely, causing cardiac output to decrease, and the coronary arteries receive less blood, causing supply to the heart to decrease. Tachycardia is classified as stable or unstable. Heart rates greater than or equal to 150 beats per minute usually cause symptoms. Unstable tachycardia always requires prompt attention. Stable tachycardia can become unstable. Symptoms of tachycardia: hypotension, sweating, pulmonary edema / congestion, jugular venous distension, chest pain / discomfort, shortness of breath, weakness / dizziness / lightheadedness, altered mental state. Symptomatic tachycardia with heart rate greater than 150 BPM. 1. If the individual is unstable, provide immediate synchronized cardioversion. Is the individual's tachycardia producing hemodynamic instability and serious symptoms? Other symptoms, i.e. pain and distress of acute myocardial infarction, AMI, producing the tachycardia. 2. Assess the individual's hemodynamic status and begin treatment by establishing FO, giving supplementary oxygen, and monitoring the heart. Heart rate of 100 to 130 BPM is usually the result of underlying process and often represents sinus tachycardia. In sinus tachycardia, the goal is to identify and treat the underlying systemic cause. Heart rate greater than 150 BPM may be symptomatic. The higher the rate, the more likely the symptoms are due to the tachycardia. 3. Assess the QRS complex. Regular narrow complex tachycardia, probable SVT. Attempt vagal maneuvers. Obtain 12-lead ECG, consider expert consultation. Adenosine 6 mg rapid IVP, if no conversion, give 12 mg IVP, second dose, may attempt 12 mg once. Irregular narrow complex tachycardia, probable AFib. Obtain 12-lead ECG, consider expert consultation. Control rate with diltiazem 15 to 20 mg, 0.25 mg, /kg for over 2 minutes or beta blockers. Regular wide complex tachycardia, probable VT. Obtain 12-lead ECG, consider expert consultation. Convert rhythm using amiodarone 150 mg for over 10 minutes. Perform elective cardioversion. Irregular wide complex tachycardia. Obtain 12-lead ECG, consider expert consultation. Consider antiarrhythmic. If Torsades de Pointe, give magnesium sulfate 1 to 2 grams for, may follow with 0.5 to 1 gram over 60 minutes. Acute coronary syndrome. Acute coronary syndrome, ACS, is a collection of clinical presentations including unstable angina, non-ST elevation myocardial infarction, NSTMI, and ST elevation myocardial infarction, STEMI. ACS is classically recognized by one or more of the following symptoms: crushing chest pain, shortness of breath, pain that radiates to the jaw, arm or shoulder, sweating, and or nausea or vomiting. It is important to note that not all individuals with ACS will present with these classic findings, particularly women and individuals with diabetes mellitus. It is impossible to determine a specific cardiac event from the ACS symptoms, therefore, ACS symptoms are managed in the same way. Every individual with these symptoms should be evaluated immediately. If an individual appears to be unconscious, begin with the BLS survey and follow the appropriate pathway for advanced care. If the individual is conscious, proceed with the pathway below. Acute stroke. Stroke is a condition in which normal blood flow to the brain is interrupted. Strokes can occur in two variations, ischemic and hemorrhagic. In ischemic stroke, A clot lodges in one of the brain's blood vessels, blocking blood flow through the blood vessel. In hemorrhagic stroke, a blood vessel in the brain ruptures, spilling blood into the brain tissue. Ischemic stroke and hemorrhagic stroke account for 87% and 13% of the total incidents, respectively. In general, the symptoms of ischemic and hemorrhagic strokes are similar. However, the treatments are very different. Symptoms of stroke: weakness in the arm and leg or face, vision problems, confusion, nausea or vomiting, trouble speaking or forming the correct words, problems walking or moving, severe headache, hemorrhagic. Clinical signs of stroke depend on the region of the brain affected by decreased or blocked blood flow. Signs and symptoms can include weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg, difficulty walking, difficulty with balance, vision loss, slurred or absent speech, facial droop, headache, vomiting, and change in level of consciousness. Not all of these symptoms are present, and the exam findings depend on the cerebral artery affected. The Cincinnati Pre-Hospital Stroke Scale, CPSS, is used to diagnose the presence of stroke in an individual if any of the following physical findings are seen: facial droop, arm drift, or abnormal speech. Individuals with one of these three findings as a new event have a 72% probability of an ischemic stroke. If all three findings are present, the probability of an acute stroke is more than 85%. Becoming familiar and proficient with the tool FAST utilized by the Rescuers EMS system is recommended. Mock scenarios and practice will facilitate the use of these valuable screening tools. FAST: face drooping, arm weakness, speech and time symptoms started. Individuals with ischemic stroke who are not candidates for fibrinolytic therapy should receive aspirin unless contraindicated by true allergy to aspirin. All individuals with confirmed stroke should be admitted to neurologic intensive care unit if available. Stroke treatment includes blood pressure monitoring and regulation per protocol, seizure precautions, frequent neurological checks, airway support as needed, physical/occupational/speech therapy evaluation, body temperature checks, and blood glucose monitoring. Individuals who received fibrinolytic therapy should be followed for signs of bleeding or hemorrhage. Certain individuals, age 18 to 79 years with mild to moderate stroke, may be able to receive PA tissue plasminogen activator up to 4.5 hours after symptom onset. Under certain circumstances, intra-arterial PA is possible up to 6 hours after symptom onset. When the time of symptom onset is unknown, it is considered an automatic exclusion for PA. If time of symptom onset is known, the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke, NIMS, has established the time goals below. Before giving anything, medication or food, by mouth, you must perform a bedside swallow screening. All acute stroke individuals are considered NPO on admission. The goal of the stroke team, emergency physician, or other experts should be to assess the individual with suspected stroke within 10 minutes of arrival in the emergency department, ED. The CT scan should be completed within 10 to 25 minutes of the individual's arrival in the ED and should be read within 45 minutes. Self-assessment for ACLS cases. 1. Which of the following is the correct next step in management after delivery of a shock? A. Checked pulse. B. Ventilate only. C. Do chest compressions. D. Shock again. 2. Where does the electrical impulse for normal cardiac activity originate? A. Unknown. B. SA node. C. AV node. D. Purkinje fibers. 3. Choose the correct sequence of electrical activity in the heart for normal sinus rhythm. A. SA node, Purkinje, AV node, bundle of His. B. Purkinje, bundle of His, AV node, SA node. C. SA node, AV node, bundle of his Purkinje fibers. D. AV node, SA node, bundle of hers Purkinje fibers. 4. What does the QRS complex on an ECG represent? A. Ventricular contraction. B. AV valve closure. C. Atrial contraction. D. Septum relaxation. 5. What is the recommended method to monitor breathing during ACLS care? A. Look, listen, and feel. B. Capnography. C. Venous blood gas. D. Monitoring chest rise. 6. You are transporting an individual who goes into cardiac arrest during transport. 4. Access is unsuccessful. What is the next step? A. Terminate resuscitation. B. Obtain intraosseous access. C. Place a central line. D. Administer all medications through ET tube. 7. An individual has been ill and the monitor reveals sinus tachycardia with a heart rate of 135. What is the primary goal in treating this individual? A. Determine the underlying cause. B. Prepare for synchronized cardioversion. C. Transfuse packed red blood cells. D. Administer adenosine. 8. A 79-year-old individual is in SVT. BP is 80/50, and he is complaining of chest discomfort and feels like passing out. What is the next appropriate step? A. Carotid massage. B. Synchronized cardioversion. C. Amiodarone. D. Lidocaine. 9. You are treating an individual who presented in ventricular fibrillation. After CPR and 1. attempt at defibrillation, his new rhythm is third degree AV block. What is the next step in management? A. Repeat defibrillation. B. Vasopressin. C. Transcutaneous pacing. D. High-dose epinephrine. 10. A 55-year-old male has stroke symptoms, and the CT scan shows multilobar infarction, more than one-third of the cerebral hemisphere. What therapy is contraindicated? A. Oxygen. B. Monitoring glucose. C. Thrombolytic therapy. D. Blood pressure monitoring. 11. What piece of data is critical to obtain in all stroke individuals? A. Date of birth. B. Hemoglobin A1C. C. Bilateral arm blood pressure. D. Time last seen normal. 12. True or false, the goal of stroke care is to complete the ED initial evaluation within 10 minutes, the neurologic evaluation within 25 minutes of arrival, and have the head CT read within 45 minutes of arrival. Answers. 1. C. CPR is resumed for 2 minutes before any reassessment is performed. Begin with compression followed by ventilation in a 30-to-2 ratio for adults. 2. B. The SA node generates electrical impulse in normal cardiac activity. The impulse then travels to the rest of the conduction system and facilitates contraction of the atria and ventricles. 3. C. Normal cardiac electrical impulse travels in a consistent pattern producing normal sinus rhythm. 4. A. The QRS represents ventricular contraction. The T wave represents repolarization of the ventricles. 5. B. Quantitative waveform capnography is the recommended method to assess breathing / ventilation during ACLS. In addition, pulse oximetry should be assessed, and clinical assessment plays a role as well. 6. B. An intraosseous line can be placed rapidly and is the next best route for drug delivery. Absorption after ET tube delivery is unreliable. 7. A. The primary objective of treating sinus tachycardia is to determine the underlying cause. Appropriate treatment decisions can then be made. 8. B. This individual is symptomatic with hypotension and chest pain. Adenosine could be considered if four access is already in place, while preparation is made for cardioversion. Carotid massage may cause complications in elderly individuals. 9. C. Transcutaneous pacing is indicated for Moebius type 2 second degree AV block, third degree AV block, and bradycardia with symptomatic ventricular escape rhythm. 10. C. Thrombolytic therapy is contraindicated in large strokes that involve more than one-third of a cerebral hemisphere. 11. D. Eligibility for thrombolytic therapy hinges on the time of onset of symptoms. Current guidelines support administering TURF for eligible individuals with symptom onset of 3 hours or fewer. Selected individuals may be eligible for up to 4.5 hours from onset. 12. True. Stroke is a neurologic emergency and rapid evaluation and treatment may improve. Outcomes. Chapter the mantra eight. Time is brain should be ACLS used. Essentials. Prompt recognition and intervention with high-quality CPR is critical in any arrest situation. Mentally prepare for resuscitation as you approach the scene and the individual. Scene safety is critical, do not get injured yourself. BLS focuses early CPR and early defibrillation. Do not attempt to place an oropharyngeal airway in an awake individual. Pull the jaw up into the mask, do not push the mask onto the face as it may close the airway. 4-OR-IO is the preferred route for drug delivery. ET route is discouraged and unpredictable. The dose of amiodarone is different for VF and VT with a pulse. Resume chest compressions immediately after delivering a shock. Targeted temperature management is utilized after return of spontaneous circulation. Learn specific cardiac rhythms, sinus tachycardia, SVT, atrial fibrillation / flutter, VF, VT, torsade de pointe, and asystole. Confirm asystole in two separate leads. VF and pulseless VT are treated the same, deliver a shock. Remember the reversible causes of cardiac arrest, the H's and the T's. Capnography is a valuable tool in resuscitation. If PETCO2 is lower than 10 mm of mercury, attempt to improve CPR quality and investigate the advanced airway placement. If capnography is still less than 10 mm of mercury, consider termination of efforts. Use nitroglycerin with caution in individuals with inferior myocardial infarction. Avoid if systolic blood pressure, SBP, is less than 90 mm of mercury, or if taking erectile dysfunction medications, phosphodiesterase inhibitors, within 24 hours. Confusion may be a presenting sign of a stroke. Additional tools. Medicode. With Medicode, you no longer will have to carry a set of expandable cards with you at all times while at work. You will never have to waste valuable time in an emergency situation searching through multiple algorithms until you find the right one. All of the algorithms are now accessible from the palm of your hand, and you will be selecting your desired algorithm by memory in no time. Choose between multiple viewing options and easily share algorithms with coworkers and friends through email and social media. To improve functionality and speed in obtaining your desired algorithm as quickly as possible in an emergency, they have been divided between BLS, ACLS, PALS, and CPR. All are accessible from the home screen. The individual algorithms included in this app are Basic Life Support, BLS, Advanced Cardiac Life Support, ACLS, Pediatric Advanced Life Support, PALS, Cardiopulmonary Resuscitation, CPR, AED, and First Aid. CertAlert Plus. CERT. Alert Plus is the perfect app to minimize the potential area of stress and distraction in your life. With CERT Alert Plus, you will have all your licenses and certifications in one place anytime you need them. We will keep track and remind you when your expiration date approaches, and we will help you with your registration whenever possible. With CERT Alert Plus, you can compile all required licenses and certifications in one location. Take photos, front and back, of certification cards and licenses for simple reference. Record all expiration dates and store with ease. Choose when you want to be reminded of your approaching expiration dates. Send all license or certification information directly to your email after exporting from the app. Quick access to easily register for online certification and recertification courses. ACLS review questions. 1. The following are included in the ACLS survey: A. Airway, breathing, circulation, differential diagnosis. B. Airway, breathing, circulation, defibrillation. C. Assessment, breathing, circulation, defibrillation. D. Airway, breathing, CPR, differential diagnosis. 2. The primary focus of treating cardiac arrest is A. Effective CPR. B. Early defibrillation. C. Drug administration. D. Both A and B. 3. Which of the following is not an example of an advanced airway? A. Opharyngeal airway. B. Esophageal tracheal tube. C. Laryngeal mask airway. D. Conga tube. 4. The following are possible effects of hyperventilation: A. Increased intrathoracic pressure. B. Decreased venous return to the heart. C. Both A and B. D. None of the above. 5. The normal sinus rhythm of the heart starts in the A. left ventricle. B. atrioventricular node. C. sinoatrial node. D. right ventricle. 6. What is high quality CPR? A. 80 compressions per minute at a depth of at least 1 inch, 2.5 centimeters. B. 100 to 120 compressions per minute at a depth of 2 to 2.4 inches, 5 to 6 centimeters, circa 80 compressions per minute at a depth of at least 2 inches, 5 centimeters. D. 100 compressions per minute at a depth of at least 1 inch, 2.5 centimeters. 7. Before placement of an advanced airway, the compression to ventilation ratio during adult CPR is A. 30 to 1. B. 30 to 2. Circa 15 to 1. D. 20 to 2. 8. You should underscore in an individual with ventricular fibrillation immediately following a shock. A. Resume CPR. B. Check heart rate. C. Analyze rhythm. D. Give amiodarone. 9. Underscore joules, J, are delivered per shock when using a monophasic defibrillator. A. 380. B. 320. C. 340. D. 360. 10. The following medications can be used to treat hypotension during the post-cardiac arrest phase: A. Dopamine. B. Milrinone. C. Amiodarone. D. Both A and B. 11. The following antiarrhythmic drugs can be used for persistent ventricular fibrillation or pulseless ventricular tachycardia, except A. Amiodarone. B. Lidocaine. C. Atropine. D. Epinephrine. 12. Which of the following is not a potential cause of P? A. Toxins. B. Hyperkalemia. C. Hyperventilation. D. Trauma. 13. Which of the following is a shockable rhythm? A. Ventricular fibrillation. B. Ventricular tachycardia, pulseless. C. Torsade de Pointe. All of the above. 14. The following drugs may be used in an ACS individual for cardiac reperfusion: A. Fibrinolytic therapy. B. Epinephrine. C. Atropine. D. Both A and C. 15. All of the following are bradycardic rhythms except A. Atrial fibrillation. B. First degree heart block. C. Mobitz type ID. Third degree heart block. 16. Underscore access is preferred in arrest due to easy access and no interruption in CPR. A. Central B. Peripheral C. Intraosseous D. Endotracheal 17. Which of the following is first-line treatment for ACS? A. Morphine B. Aspirin C. Nitroglycerin D. All of the above 18. The following are classic signs of an acute stroke except A. Facial droop B. Arm drift C. Abnormal speech D. Seizure 19. Which of the following is not found within the 8 Ds of stroke care? A. Detection B. Dispatch C. Delivery D. Defibrillate. Answers 1. A. Airway, breathing, circulation, differential diagnosis 2. D. Both A and B 3. A. Oropharyngeal airway 4. C. Both A and B 5. C. Sinoatrial node 6. B. 100 to 120 compressions per minute at a depth of 2 to 2.4 inches, 5 to 6 centimeters, 7. B. 30 to 28. A. Resume CPR 9. D. 360 10. A. Dopamine 11. C. Atropine 12. C. Hyperventilation 13. D. All of the above 14. A. Fibrinolytic therapy 15. A. Atrial fibrillation 16. B. Peripheral 17. D. All of the above 18. D. Seizure 19. D. Defibrillate. Advanced Cardiac Life Support, ACLS, Provider Handbook. Written by Dr. Carl Dist. Narrated by Amazon Polly. Thank you for completing the Save a Life Initiative Advanced Cardiac Life Support Provider Handbook and learning how to save lives. To complete your ACLS training and to become ACLS certified, please visit us online at SevereLife.com to learn ACLS more. Provider Handbook. Written by Dr. Carl Dist. Narrated by Amazon Polly. Thank you for completing the Save a Life Initiative Advanced Cardiac Life Support Provider Handbook and learning how to save lives. To complete your ACLS training and to become ACLS certified, please visit us online at SevereLife.com to learn more.